I'm Sam Post, and welcome to The Music Post, where each episode we get to know some music and explore it with some listening, commentary, and demonstrations. Today we'll learn a little bit more about The Art of Fugue by Bach, and look closely at the third member of the set, Contrapuntus III. Along the way, I'll tell you more about how fugues work, and about dissonance and chromaticism, and how Bach uses them to great effect, especially in this fugue. If you missed the introduction to The Art of Fugue, I encourage you to go back and listen to the last episode. But just as a quick reminder, here's the main theme that inspires all the fugues and canons that make up The Art of Fugue. The third fugue takes this main theme and flips it upside down. Might not seem like such a dramatic change. It doesn't sound all that different in character, and yet this fugue will be completely different from the first one that we heard last episode. That one was meditative, serene. This one is much more unsettling, both rhythmically and in its intense chromaticism. Let's listen to it now, and then I'll explain more about what I mean. I managed to record it on a slightly more in tune piano than the one I'm playing on now, so enjoy. Okay, so one of my goals here is to help you appreciate how insanely crazy this music is, especially for having been written in, you know, around 1740, how it was years ahead of its time in its harmonic adventurousness. So it's really some crazy music, and before we go back to the beginning, I want to play again a little bit from the end, from a section in the alto, or second highest, of the four voices in this fugue. And hopefully you'll hear a little bit how bizarre it is. It sounds like it could have come out of some 20th century composition because it's so strange. And now, with all four voices, I'll play a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. piece is ostensibly in D minor, and what that means is it's using a subset of all the notes on the piano as its main scale, this D minor scale. But if you play a scale with all the notes on the piano, it sounds much different. It kind of fills in all the gaps here. And one of the reasons this piece sounds so ahead of its time, sounds so strange, is because it uses many more of those notes that are in between the gaps, filling in the notes that don't really belong in the D minor scale, and uses them quite a lot, quite consistently. To be a little more specific, let's look at the tenor voice at the beginning. Now, just like any fugue, this fugue starts with each voice coming in with the main theme, the subject. But I want to call your attention actually to what happens after each voice plays the subject, because that's where this fugue really takes on a new flavor. So here's the tenor voice at the beginning. Here is the subject. This is not the subject anymore. So you can hear where it's using this chromatic scale to fill in the gaps, so to speak, between the notes in D minor. You're going down and then coming up. The other thing that's very notable here is all the syncopations. This piece has two strong beats, one, two, one, two, but there are lots of notes that are accented not on strong beats. One, two, one, two, one, two, one, two. So this little section is played while the alto voice comes in with its subject up here. And since it comes back again and again, always being played in one voice while another voice plays the subject, we call it fittingly the countersubject. I'll listen one more time to this little duet between the alto and the tenor voice. You'll hear lots of notes that clash with each other. We call them dissonant notes. These happen not only throughout this piece, throughout Bach's music. Don't let anyone ever tell you that this music is very pleasant and relaxing. It's not really meant to be pleasant and relaxing. There's a lot of conflict, and in this piece, they come thick and fast. The important thing is how those dissonant notes arise and then resolve. So listen here. Keep going, you'll hear lots of these types of moments on almost every strong beat. Stopped was at the end of all of four voices' entrances, and what we get next is this little interlude that takes a little cell of music and repeats it four times, and in fugal jargon speak, this is called an episode. Repeat. Repeat. Repeats don't sound exactly the same because the soprano and alto voices switch roles each time, they flip, and we get a different harmony each time, but the bass voice is repeating the same figure just at a different pitch level. Here things start to get weird in a different way. We'll hear the subject in the soprano voice here. Only it's a different, mutated, syncopated version of the subject, whereas what we might expect would be... which would be the original version. Instead, we get... It's not unusual for Bach to mess around a little bit with a fugue subject, change around some of the intervals, but here he's rewritten the rhythm and added these extra notes, so very unusual. He's basically changed it to match more closely the counter subject, which we hear here in the alto voice. So together with the soprano, and one more time all together. Next we have a mini episode. Again, just a little section of music without the subject, which, to be even more technical, is fugue jargon is called codetta. And after that, we're going to hear, again, this syncopated version of the subject in the tenor voice here. And keep in mind, even when I'm pointing out these places where the subject happens, we're still going to hear the same chromatic counter subject that we heard at the beginning. And what's happening around the voices that have the subject and the counter subject is always very interesting, and again toward the end will become increasingly bizarre. So going back. Dissonance. Coming up next, we have another little codetta, and then what is probably my favorite moment in this whole piece, this whole fugue. I've been talking so much about the dissonance and the intensity and the chromaticism, and we get this one moment, which is this ray of sunshine in the midst of all this somewhat sinister music. We get the subject in a major key, for really the only time in this whole fugue. Very beautiful. Going back. Here it is. Pretty quickly, we're back to this sneaky chromaticism. Next, we have an episode very similar to the one we heard toward the beginning, these four repeated cells of music, only the progression of harmonies is not what we expect because it's very different from the one we heard earlier. It could have been. But instead, we get. Basically something that rises up and rises in tension as well, as opposed to falling as the one did earlier. Now here we have, again, the subject, this time in the soprano voice, in its original version. Next we have, in the soprano voice, back to the original subject, and the counter subject in the alto voice. But don't ignore the tenor and bass voice, also very interesting. All together. Another episode, a little more cheerful than the last one. Descending back into the darkness, here's the subject. And again here in the alto. Now soprano. tenor. Stunning music. Let's listen to it all the way through now one more time. This episode of the Music Post. You can find other episodes and related links and clips at www.samueljpost.com/podcast. And this podcast should be in the iTunes store very soon for subscription. And you can email me with comments or questions at samueljpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time.